No time restraints either.
No, never.
No, we can go till midnight. Okay, Vedanta Sara. And in Vedanta Sara, we are on verse 135. And everybody should have their handout if you need the transliteration. There is a handout on the... Yeah, okay. So let's go ahead and chant the opening prayer.
Akandam Sachidanandam Avang Manasakocharam Atmanam Akiladharam Ashraye Bhishta Siddhaye Arthato Pyadvayanandan Atita Dvaita Bhanataha Guru Narajya Vedanta Saram Vakshay Yathamati.
Okay, so I'm going to place. So repeat after me. Tattaha tattadbhasakam nitya shuddha buddha mukta satya svabhavam pratyak chaitanyam eva atma vastviti vedanta Vedanta Vidvat Anubhavaha.
Vedanta Vidvat Anubhavaha.
So I'll break the sandhi. Ataha. Tat. You don't have to repeat. You can. Actually, you know what? It is kind of a good idea for you to repeat, actually, for learning the sandhi. So let's go ahead and have you repeat. Ataha. Tat. Tat. Bhasakam. Tat. Tat. Bhasakam. Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Satya Swabhavam.
Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Satya
Swabhavam. This Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Satya Swabhavam, Swamiji sometimes rattles that off. As a definition for Brahman, you know.
Yeah.
Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Satya Swabhavam. Go ahead. Mukta Satya Swabhavam.
Mukta Satya Swabhavam.
Pratyak Chaitanyam.
Pratyak Chaitanyam.
Atma Vastu Iti.
Atma Vastu Iti.
Vedanta. Vedanta.
Vedanta.
Vidvat.
Vidvat.
Anubhavaha.
Anubhavaha.
So he says, Ataha, therefore, Tat Tat Bhasakam, the one who illumines. Bhas means to illumine. When you put that Aka affix on to a verb, you're making it into a noun, which is like a gerund. It's like an agent noun. Agent noun. The one who illumines. It's either going to be the illumining or the one who illumines, the illuminator. So here, the one who is Bhasaka, who is illumining, tat, each one of those things. And we have to go back to the previous verse. Maybe we'll read that over together. So the one who is the basaka, the one who is illumining, tat, that. So in Sanskrit, when you do something like do a repetition, like instead of tad, if I were to say tad basaka, it would mean the one who illumines that. And the tad would be a pronoun that is referring back to a single item. But if you reduplicate it like tut tut, it means each one of those things that we've listed, right? Tut tut. So each and every one of those things. Tut tut bhasakam. So here, ataha therefore, tut tut bhasakam, the illumining of each one of those things, tut tut, each one of them. Nitya. Nitya means timeless, free from time. Right? Remember that the word nitya can be used in two ways. It can be used relatively, that which is eternal, that which is continuous, that which is going on forever is nitya. Ongoing is nitya. But in reference to Brahman, nitya means timeless. It's the eternality is not the eternality of ongoingness. It's the eternality of timelessness. So, nitya, shuddha, that which is pure. Pure means free of ajnanam, karma, kama, karma. Ajnanam means free of ignorance, free of kama, raga, dvesha, free of karma. There's many words for shuddha. Amalina is one, you know, free of any type of impurity. But when you want to break down, well, what is the freedom of impurity? There's no ajnanam, there's no kama, there's no karma. Kama is desire. Ajnanam, there's no ajnanam, ignorance, there's no kama, there's not no kama or karma. So that's often, when we translate the meaning of shuddha as purity, what does that mean? For something to be pure. You can say it's free from duality, but often it's said free from ajnana, kama, and karma. Ajnanam leads to kama, desire, which leads to karma. You can also even add more. Ajnana, which leads to kama, which leads to raga dvesha, which leads to karma. So these are the words that are sometimes grouped together in terms of what we mean by shuddha. Shuddha. So it would be like this. You could say something like this. Ajnana, kama, raga dvesha, karma, rahita. Rahita means devoid of, free of. So sometimes there'll be a list like that, which ends in rahita, which means free from. Okay. So rahita is a word that comes again and again.
Is it here?
No. Okay. I'm just adding it. So we have nitya, shuddha. Buddha means consciousness. Capital K, knowledge. Consciousness. Mukta means free, liberated. Desha kalavastu aparichedaha, totally free by its nature, advaita, mukta. Satya, that which is, you know, satya, satya mitya. Satya is that which is true, that which is real, that which is free from past, present, and that which can't be negated in past, present, or future, is the definition of satyam. That which cannot be negated in past, present, or future is satyam. It's nityam, that which is and is free from time, non-objectifiable. All of these things come in there. But satyam is defined as that which can't be negated in past, present, or future. Mitya is defined as that which is not satyam, but is not tucham. It's not satyam, meaning it doesn't fit that definition of satyam. The definition of satyam is that which can't be negated in past, present, or future. Nothing in the creation fits that definition. But you can't say that anything that's objectifiable, if you say it is objectifiable, means we experience it, right? You can't say it's tucham. Tucham means absolute non-existence. It's not there. So we can't define it as tucham either. Mitya is that which cannot be defined or categorized as satyam, according to the definition of satyam, nor can we say can't be categorized as asat either. Not asat here meaning non-existence. So the definition of mitya is sad asad bhyam. Sat asat, sat asad bhyam, anirvachaniya. Anirvachaniya means can't be defined, cannot. Swamiji sometimes uses this, and I think it's good. Can't be categorized. You can't put it in the satyam camp, you can't put it in the tucham camp. Because we're experiencing it. That's the overarching definition of mitya. The other definition of mitya is that which depends upon an adhishtana for its being. Without the adhishtana, without that substrate being, mitya can't exist. Without the clay, you can't have pot. Without the rope, you can't have snake. That's totally 100% dependent for its existence, for its being, on something else. That is mitya. Brahman is not mitya. Brahman is satyam. It is the only thing that is satyam. The only thing that is not subject to time. That is, but not subject, the non-objectifiable, not subject to time. There's nothing else like that.
And you said it was not in the creation?
Brahman is the self of the creation. It's not an object in the creation. Anything that is an object in the creation, it means that it can be objectified, first of all. So there's subject-object relationship. If it's objectifiable, it exists within duality, is known through subject-object relationship, comes into being, goes out of being, mitya. Brahman cannot come into being or go out of being. Brahman is as Brahman is. there is no time. The being that is Brahman, the being that is yourself, if you go back from the standpoint of the creation, if you go back an infinite number of years, or forward an infinite number of years, Brahman is. It hasn't become old or young. Right? So the self that you are now is timeless, free from time, is changeless. Okay. Not, if it were an object in the universe, then it's subject to it, to deshakala, time and space, like every other object in the universe. It can be differentiated. Anything that can be objectified can be differentiated from another. Right? And because it's subject to that differentiation, then it's subject to desha, and it's subject to kala, because everything within the creation, everything with Maya, in Maya, is subject to continual change.
Well, when we see the creation, should we think that Brahman is there?
You should think that Brahman is there, like if you see a pot, you see the clay. If you see a pot, you can't say that the clay is not there.
I see the creation.
You see the creation, and once you recognize your own being, you can't have an experience of the creation that is away from the Satchitananda of yourself. It's not possible. So, but it's only when there's that viveka that differentiates the Satchitananda from the Namarupa. Right? The Satchitananda is what is stable and is ever-present. You can't remove any type of avritti, any type of Namarupa from the Satchitananda. But the Satchitananda can be removed from the Namarupa, in that it's not dependent upon it. Any vritti that you have comes and goes. The Namarupa come and go. What doesn't come and go is the Satchitananda, which is the self of every vritti. It never wavers at all, and it's non-objectifiable. So you actually can never have an experience that is free of Brahman, that is free of the Atma. It's impossible. Only problem is that your being, until you have self-knowledge, is not differentiated from your objectifiable experience. So that's why you can say, if you're feeling sad, I am. I, this conscious being, am sad.
Yeah.
That's red-hot iron ball, right? I am happy. I am tired. I am young. I am old. This is all the adhyasa, the superimposition between the self and what can be objectified. That adhyasa is natural and will naturally occurs from beginningless time for every jiva until one knows the vastu, until one actually has the viveka jnanam, the discriminative knowledge that differentiates my being from what I have superimposed upon it. That's the adhyarupa, or adhyasa is the word that we use for that superimposition, and that's what we're going to be getting into. Okay? So Nitya, Shuddha, Buddha, Mukta, Satya, Swabhava. The one whose Swabhava, whose nature, is Nitya, Shuddha, Buddha, Mukta, Satya, Swabhava. And that is Pratyak Chaitanyam. The Chaitanya, Chaitanya means consciousness, which is Pratyak, innermost. That innermost consciousness. What do they mean by innermost? Not like it's a little pea in a pod. It's that innermost in the sense that we're doing the, when we do the viveka jnanam, everything that exists as part of the Maya Upadhi can be objectified. Once it's objectified, then it becomes the object, the self, which is the illuminator, the basaka, tat-tat basakam, the self which is the illuminator in reference, or the subject in reference to that thing, is called pratyak. Right? It's pratyak. It's in inner. The subject is inner to the outer. Like, just like my body is considered pratyak in reference to what I perceive. My sense organs are pratyak to this physical body. The identity of consciousness is going inward from the standpoint of the upadhi. So my sense organs are inner in reference to the deha, the body. The mind is pratyak in reference to the sense organs. Right, the Atma is pratyak in reference to the antakarana, the mind, like that. So when you say pratyak chaitanya, it's that consciousness that can no longer be objectified, because the consciousness, conscious being, is identified with the body through viveka. It is differentiated into a subject-object relationship. So it becomes the object. Sense organs, through viveka, become objectified instead of being the ultimate subject. They can be an object. The antakarana, the vrittis in the mind, can be objectified. So though you had taken it to be the subject, it now becomes the object. When you get to chaitanya, consciousness, you can no longer objectify it. There's no subject-object relationship possible for chaitanya, for consciousness. So it is pratyak, innermost. You can't go farther than that. It's not subject to objectification. And so we say that which is not subject to objectification, that which is the pratyak chaitanyam, the innermost chaitanya, what is its nature? Nitya, shuddha, buddha, mukta, satya, swabhava. That is its the nature of pratyak chaitanya. Okay? And this pratyak chaitanya, eva alone, is the atma vastu. Atma vastu. Now, vastu is neuter. Okay? Why did they say atma vastu? This again, this word vastu, and it's a very common, Swamiji is always using the word vastu. Vastu in just vyavahara, empirical language, just means a thing. Every one of these things is a vastu. This is a vastu, this is a vastu, this is a vastu. Any given thing that we experience, the thing is a vastu. So anything in English language that you can say this thing, that thing, that is a vastu. But upon analysis, what we denote as a vastu, upon analysis, is really a conglomerate. It's just names within names within names within names. Like if we say this lamp is a vastu, which we do, it's a thing. But upon analysis, it's really many things are put together to give this a thing. The Buddha always uses the example of a chariot. We think of an ancient example. We think of the chariot as a thing. This is a chariot. But upon analysis, it's really not anything but wood and nails and wheels and, you know, reins and whatever the component parts are of a chariot. And he'll break it down into those component parts and then say, where's the chariot really? Is there really any chariot? Is there really a vastu there? So everything that we label as a vastu in the world upon even the most superficial analysis, it's not a difficult thing. Upon even the most superficial analysis, you can see there's really no thingness to the thing. The only thing that can withstand inquiry and remain as a vastu is the atma. Because the atma is not subject to objectification. It's not something made of parts. So you can dismiss it because it's made of parts, because it's subject to coming and going. The only thing that really deserves the title of vastu is the atma. So here they say it's this pratyak chaitanya, which is the atma vastu. Iti vedanta vidvat anubhavaha. This is the anubhava. This is the anubhava means experience. But when you say anubhava here, it's not like the atma is an object of experience. This is the recognized knowledge. The aparoksha jnanam, the recognized immediate insight or immediate aparoksha jnanam of the vidvan, the Vedanta. Vedanta vidvan. Vidvan is the nominative singular of vidvat, is the one who has knowledge. What knowledge? The Vedanta, Vedanta vid, the one who has knowledge of the Vedanta. Of the Vedanta means of the Upanishads, of the vision given by the Upanishads. Vedanta vidvat anubhavaha. This is the direct recognition, the aparoksha jnanam, of the one who knows, has vid. That vat shows possession, the one who has knowledge of what? Of the Vedanta vit. So that the Vedanta vidvan anubhavaha. Right? That's it. So, ataha tat tat basakam nitya shuddha buddha mukta satya svabhavam pratyak chaitanyam eva atmavastu iti vedanta vid vedanta vidvad anubhavaha. Clear? Mm-hmm. do the next one.
This is the last verse.
No, we have one more little tiny one. Evam ajarobah. So, in this manner, the ajaropa, what has been done here is in the previous, in this whole previous sections that we've done, even going all the way back to, let me find it here. Oh, I found it. In the beginning of chapter 3 is the jiva in superposition.
What page?
So, oh, it's on page 69 in your book. All of these verses, and then, you know, we did the Buddhas, we did the Charvakas, the Prakritas, the Charvakas, the Mimamsas, the Buddhas, the Shunyavadins, the other type of Buddhism, all of that. We did all of that. Established all of that as being erroneous, abhasa. Then he goes to the true nature of the self. That's these last few verses. I've been trying to differentiate the self and establish the self in reference to those things, which have all been superimposed on the self. So to talk of something as a superimposition, it has to be superimposed on something. So all of these things. And remember, he started really with the sun, superimposing the Atma on the sun, then superimposing the Atma on the body, on the indriyas, on the prana, you know, and then on the Anandamaya Kosha, two types of superposition on the Anandamaya Kosha, then two types of Buddhism, and the Shunyavadins and the Vijnanavadins. The Vijnanavadins of that bleep consciousness, Kshinika Vijnanavadins, that was negated, then the Bauta position was negated. So all of these were examples of adhyaropa, of superimposition. But superimposition on what? On the Atma, because every one of these things was taken to be the Atma and then was continually being negated. That's that it's continually being negated by the next superimposition, which is more subtle. Until all of those are negated and the nature of the Atma in reference to, they're negated in reference to the Atma, okay? The negation is always, the adhyaropa is always in reference to the Atma. So just to explain this, if I take the Atma to be the body, I have to negate the body as being myself, right? So I am this body, then another school of thoughts can say, no, you're not the body. The body is objectified by the sense organs. You are the sense organs. See what I mean? So now there's a subject-object relationship between the body and the sense organs, because the sense organs are the ones responsible for the basika, for illumining the body. And so the Atma now has been released from the adhyaropa, the superposition of the body, but still stuck on the sense organs. You see? So now another vada, another school will come in. Purvapaksha will come in and say, no, it's not the sense organs, it's actually the prana, because without the prana, the sense organs can't function. So now the Atma is identified with the prana, but it's released from the sense organs. So the sense organs now become, in your mind, an adhyaropa, because it's an adhyaropa now, onto the Atma, because now you know that the Atma is the prana. And so there's a subject-object relationship. The the sense organs become the adhyaropa, the atma is the prana. Then somebody comes along and says, it can't be the prana, it's the manas. Now the prana is negated, and it becomes adhyaropa, the atma is the manas. No, it's not the manas, it's the buddhi. So now the manas is negated, it becomes adhyaropa, because the atma has landed on the buddhi, right? And then you can say, no, it's the anandamaya kosha. So that once that is negated, then the anandamaya kosha becomes adhyaropa, because the atma has moved to another level. And you can say the atma is non-existent, like the or the buddhi, whatever. Mm-hmm. And once that is negated, then the atma is now free of that adhyaropa. When you've negated everything that can function as an upadhi, then all of those things become adhyaropa, but you still need a positive assertion of what is left. And so here, what you have in the Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Satya Svabhava, you have a positive assertion of what is left behind after everything that can possibly be objectified has been negated. And now you have the positive, assertion, and what backs up that positive assertion is the aparoksha jnanam of the vidvan. The Vedanta Vidvat Anubhavaha is backing up that assertion that there is such an Atma, as the Upanishads say, which is free, which exists free of all of these upadis, that Svabhava is whose Svabhava, Nitya Shuddha Buddha, etc., whose Svabhava is not limited by any of these upadis, which had previously been pointed out to be the self. So having made the positive assertion of the Atma, this adhyaropa is complete, right? Because everything has been, that can be negated, has been negated. So now he says, evam adhyaropaha, in this manner, the adhyaropa has been accomplished. And so what we're going to see now is the apavada. There's two terms, adhyaropa, apavada. These go together. So the adhyaropa and then the apavada is the negation of what has, the apavada is the negation of all of that. So he's established the adhyaropa. Now we're going to systematically go through and negate it and discuss it. And so you're going to hear these terms. Swami Jesus uses all the time, adhyaropa, apavada. Right? It's teaching methodology. It's a major prakriya that is used in the Vedanta. Because what is the situation here? The adhyaropa means this whole creation is taken to be the Satchitananda. Red hot iron ball. In order to gain knowledge of yourself, you need to, first of all, define the adhyaropa, everything that is superimposed. And in the understanding of the superimposition, you have to recognize the self, or there's nothing that the superimposition is superimposed on. So there's a whole prakriya, and we're going to go into that in some depth.
How do you know when you've taken care of all of the superimpositions on the self?
Well, that's a good question, because now, in the whole teaching methodology of Vedanta, we are continually, through very many different types of prakriyas, doing the adhyaropa apavada. So we can look at it, the creation, we can divide in terms of, say, the panchakoshas. The panchakoshas are like the anamaya kosha, you know, the body, the sense organs, the prana, anamaya kosha, pranamaya kosha, manomaya kosha, Vijnanamaya kosha, Anandamaya kosha. So these five things we can use to help us see what can actually be objectified and differentiated from the self. We can use the three shariras, Karana sharira, Sukshma sharira, Stula sharira, causal body, subtle body, physical body. You know, then we can go into the Driktrisha, the see or seen differentiation, which is a different form of the Panchakosha Viveka, really. Then we go into looking at the creation itself and going into the karya karana. What, in any experience that we have, what is the nama rupa, the name form, And what is the upadana karanam? What is an effect and what is the material cause? Mm-hmm. Right? This becomes where the Vedanta, really the primary prakriya for the Vedanta is karya karana. Cause effect. In this sense, because the whole Ishvara is taken into account. If we look at this world of nama-rupa, name and form, differentiation, all the bedas, all of the differentiations, every nama-rupa has an upadana-karana. It has a cause. It has a substance. The upadana-karana of the pot is clay. The upadana-karana of the cedar chest is wood. Right? Of the rug is wool. So everything has a... Every nama-rupa is a nama-rupa of something. It's made of something. And so what ultimately of these somethings is the karana? Because is the cause. Because in any analysis of thingness, we come into things within things. Things within things within things. And so, like for instance, the upadana karana of the lamp, right, all of a sudden breaks into the many, many parts. And those parts break into more parts. And so in the end, Swamiji doesn't even use rupa anymore. In the end, everything is just names within names within names within names. But all the way through names within names within names within names, there is an upadana karana. There is a material cause. There is isness. There is something there. But as you continue with this analysis, what you find is that what is the upadana karana is continually negated. Name within names within names. You're continually negating the upadana karana.
Yeah.
Hi, little soaking girl.
Where is she?
You're continually negating.
She's on the porch.
Yeah, sounds like
she's at the door.
Oh,
she's waiting for her towel.
Oh, good.
Oh, wet.
Girl. And we were at such a good place.
Oh, girl.
Oh. Oh, Tibbeth. Girl. Resonates, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have to respond to it.
Guys? Sound like you, right?
Arjun won't have it anymore. Not he does.
Okay.
She's going back out.
She's
going out.
She just wants attention.
That's great.
Well, she's I've never seen her this wet. She's totally soaked.
Where she's
really
she is wet.
She went out.
Oh, she'll go into the garage. She'll wait in the garage.
It's the warmest spot in the
yeah.
place.
So anyway, in the end of your analysis, you end up really having to take the final form off. As long as it's a form, it's mithya. Anything that has a form, you know, anything that has a form has a substance. You know, that it's as though containing. But in the end, what is the upatana karana of all forms and all forms within forms is just the Satchitananda. And that being a formless form, being formless, can't go through any modification to become the creation. And so this karya karana relationship is one of vivarta upadana karana. This word vivarta is where we're going to be going now in the the vivarta upadana karana. It means that the Brahman, the self, is what is actually here, is the Ultimately, the upadana karana, the material cause of all of these effects, but itself can't go through any type of modification at all to become the creation. That's why it's Brahman plus this incidental attribute that we call Maya that is responsible for the projection of Nama Rupa. But Nama Rupa has no independent being of its own. It's infinitely divisible. It's just names within names within names. But what is the upadana karana of that which is the most outermost in your experience is the same as that which is innermost of your experience. So the upadana karana is the vivarta upadana karana, which is the being, the reality of every experience you have on every level. You go through the panchakoshas, whether you go through the three bodies, whether you go through the Ishwara, you know, the samishti upadi that we call Ishwara, any type of analysis, all of the prakriyas will always take you to the vivarta upadana karana, which is Brahman, which is what is actually here. So we get there through this all different prakriyas that all of them have to do with the adhyarupa apavada.
And how do you know if you've completed that subject object?
Because the atma can't be objectified.
But
so once the object, the self is you get to the self, it's non-objectifiable, it's swartha siddha, it's self-evident, and it's the thing that can't be negated in any way. But let's stop here because this is exactly what we're going to be dealing with.
Oh, great.
Okay. Start there.
Purnamidah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.